When it comes to family vacations, there are a million different trips you can take. You can get your own trip to Texas. Or if you prefer a vacation from your family, you can always get your own leave the kids with grandma. Yay! Trip to Texas. So go to TravelTexas.com/get your own for the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours.
You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live, bringing the Post's newsroom to life on stage.
The spread of the more contagious Delta variant of COVID-19 has again disrupted travel plans in the recent summer rebound. In this episode, Doug Parker, American Airlines Chair and CEO, joins Washington Post Live to discuss how the carrier is keeping its passengers and employees safe and the future of the travel industry. Let's listen.
Welcome to Washington Post Live. I'm Heather Long, an economics correspondent here at the Post. We've been talking for the last few months about this economic recovery and its many ups and downs. Our guest today is at the heart of it all. Please welcome Chair and CEO of American Airlines, Doug Parker, who's joining us from Dallas. Hi, Doug. Welcome to Post Live.
Hi, Heather. Thanks for having us.
So there's so much to discuss. Let's start with perhaps the biggest news of the day in the airline world, and that might be the Justice Department appears ready to challenge your partnership between American Airlines and JetBlue in the Northeast Alliance. They seem to be ready to claim that this is anti-competitive and would drive fares higher. How do you respond to those concerns?
Well, they're wrong, and we'll prove it. If indeed, as we expect, they issue a lawsuit, we will vigorously defend it. And then the good news about this is it's entirely pro-competitive. We and JetBlue are putting our networks together to provide more choice to consumers, to increase competition, particularly in the Northeast and in New York and Boston, where American doesn't have as big a presence as Delta and United, and JetBlue's is larger than us, but also can't compete as well against them. By putting our networks together, we give more choice to consumers. It's already working, by the way. We've been at this now for since January, and we've already increased frequencies to new communities by additional over 50 new cities, market pairs that we've added, about 170 codeshare opportunities. And for American Airlines, announced our intent to fly international routes that we never would have flown without this JetBlue Alliance, without this Northeast Alliance, places like Tel Aviv and Delhi and Athens out of JFK that simply wouldn't be flown and won't be flown if indeed we don't have this alliance. So it's disappointing. We feel really good about what we're doing for consumers, and we'll defend it, and I feel quite certain that we'll prevail.
And there seems to be some concern that while what you're describing is happening in the Boston and New York, the sort of Northeast corridor there, that somehow American and JetBlue would be able to corroborate across other parts of your networks. How can you assure regulators that you will continue to compete vigorously outside of that corridor?
Yeah, well, we've already done that, by the way. As part of the DOT allowing this to go forward back in January, we agreed that there would be no price collaboration, even on the NEA markets. And furthermore, we divested some slots in D.C. and in New York, and we agreed that we would divest more if we couldn't prove over time that the consumer benefits were there, and certainly that if we weren't vigorously competing elsewhere. Nothing in the arrangement would have us not be vigorous competitors elsewhere. We are vigorous competitors elsewhere. JetBlue is a great airline, but they're an independent airline, and this is not about merging or anything like it. As you'll hear from JetBlue, their view is this allows them to remain independent for the long term because it makes them a stronger airline, a stronger independent carrier. So we're happy to defend that piece as well. It's ill-founded.
So the other big news, we're only here on Tuesday, but in airline world, is obviously this announcement from the White House that They will hopefully in early November begin allowing many vaccinated foreign travelers into the United States from about 33 countries. I know many of our European readers were especially glad to see that news. I know we're only about 24 hours in, but are you starting to see bookings increase? Any immediate reaction? Obviously, your stock price went up, but...
Yeah, it's good news. I don't have any reports on bookings just yet, but it absolutely will drive bookings. This is something we've been asking for a while, for good reason. The administration was reluctant to send signals that things were getting better when they're not. But the right way to allow foreign nationals in the United States is not to do it country by country, but rather to do it on an individual basis. And that's what this announcement's about. Vaccinated foreign nationals will now be allowed to travel to the United States. Now that the vaccine is more prevalent, certainly in other parts of the world. You know, I was in the United Kingdom a few weeks ago. They're 87% vaccinated or something like that, and they weren't allowed to come to the United States. Didn't make any sense. It's good news that we have this now behind us. It will allow Europeans to travel to the United States, which they've been asking to do for quite some time, so long as they're vaccinated. It's a good announcement for all of us. I think it will encourage more vaccinations, which is incredibly important, but also allow people to connect with their families, people from Europe to get to the United States, business to get back operating again. The business community had been asking for this for quite some time. The ability to travel easier between Europe and the United States is yet another thing that's been holding back some business. So it's good on a number of levels and a much better policy.
Yeah. Can you give us kind of a broad update of where the airline is at? I know over the summer you sort of said you were still down about 15% to 20%, which is not surprising given the world that we're in. Obviously, the Delta variant, we all saw some of those bookings pull back in August. Can you give us a sense of where you're at and whether you think the Delta impact has passed right now?
Yeah, happy to. There's no doubt the clip you showed at the start was, I think, me talking around our second quarter earnings in July. At that point, what we had seen is the travel beginning to return. Leisure travel, by the way, has been strong since the beginning of this year, since March, and remains strong. We're actually versus 2019, which is the way we like to look at our numbers. In terms of leisure demand, we're as high as we were in 2019. So leisure demand is strong. It's remained strong even since the increase in cases of the variant. What slowed is business demand, and it was what was really coming back. So at the time of our earnings announcement, which was mid-July, we had seen business travel increase from about 25% of where it had been in March of 2021, and it increased to over 50% by June. In July, it actually increased to 65%. So it was coming back very quickly. As the variant has increased the number of cases, we've seen that part pull back. So August business demand was much closer to where it was in June, a little over 50%. So it has slowed the rate of growth. It's still, again, about where it was in June, which is good. But it's slowed because businesses have pushed back their return to work dates. And that was driving most of the demand for increase in business travel. So as the variant has resulted in more cases, large corporations have pushed back their return to work dates, and that slowed that rate of growth. But I look at all that. I think it's encouraging. What it shows is business wants to travel. And when things looked better, as they did in July, we saw the rate of growth continue to increase, and we were well on our way back to 100%. That slowed, but it'll return as we get this all behind us, which is an imperative, of course, for our country, an imperative for business to return. But as we do so, the pent-up demand for business travel is very large. And we saw it continue in July, but we saw it pull back a little bit in August. And I don't think you're going to see it ramp back up again until there's more confidence that this pandemic's behind us.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Do you think that ramp back will happen by the end of the year? I mean, Washington Post, for example, isn't fully back to the office until January. Obviously, many tech companies are in the same boat. Do you sort of think you'll get that upswing by the end of the year, or you just don't know?
We really just don't know. Indeed, you're right. Many corporations just chose to push it out till early next year, so that will certainly delay what it would have been otherwise. But we saw it coming back awfully quickly. when rates were falling. As rates begin to fall, I think we'll see it begin to return pretty quickly. One of the things we notice is that our smaller businesses have come back a lot faster than the larger corporations. And again, what I suspect is that's because larger corporations have these, return to work policies that have been pushed back. So we'll see. International travel being made more easy certainly will help. So, and again, and frankly, it's not that important if it happens in the next 3 months or 6 months from now. What's important is the long term. What's important is making sure that we get this pandemic behind us and people feel comfortable going about their business. And so that's mostly what we're focused on, and making sure that that's what Americans are ready for.
Yeah. Let me ask you one more on that long-term picture. I know you've seen some of these claims and reports by McKinsey consulting firm and others that sort of question whether or not business travel ever will get back to 100% of those 2019 levels, or whether we've fundamentally changed during this pandemic and we can do more like what you and I are doing right now over Zoom, as opposed to having to fly and be together. Do you buy that? I think McKinsey's estimate is even by 2024, they think it'll only be back about 80% of those pre-pandemic levels. What's your take on that? Do you agree, or you think they're off the mark?
Yeah, we shall see. I don't know that anyone knows for certain. What I do know, because I've been doing this for a while, is that things that tend to make the world smaller result in more demand for travel. We had these conversations in our business around video conferencing. We had these conversations around the internet being developed, and all those things that make it easier for people to connect around the world tends to make them want to eventually get together. So I think Zoom's a good thing. I think it allows people to do certain types of business more easily, which will allow more people to do more business with others. But I also think that over time, what that means is you're going to see even more and more demand for global travel. But we shall see. This is speculation on all of our parts at this point. What I do know is demand for business travel was coming back very, very quickly up through July. It wasn't back to 100%, but of course it wasn't back to 100%. I believe we'll get back to 100% and more sometime, in 2022, 2023. But we'll see. If not, you'll see the industry respond with mm-hmm. less capacity or capacity in different places.
So you talked about big corporations obviously delaying their return to the office. A lot of this is debate about vaccinations for workers and trying to get people safe. You all took a really interesting approach. You've obviously strongly encouraged your workers to get vaccinated. You provided them some generous incentives. I believe maybe an extra day of vacation, which sounds pretty good to me, and a gift card. What percent of your workforce is vaccinated by now?
We don't know exactly, because we've given those incentives up through the end of this month for people to report. And so I don't know exactly, where we're going to end up, but we're, certainly going to be higher than the national average because of those incentives. But it won't be 100%, I don't believe, just on those incentives alone. But that's where we have chosen to go at American, is to strongly support vaccinations, encourage all of our team to get vaccinated. We obviously believe that's the right thing for all of us to do in order to get this behind us. So we have chosen to give incentives. I think, as you note, I think they're probably the best incentives in all of corporate America for individuals to be vaccinated. So we'll see exactly where we end up, but The other event that's happened, of course, is the administration announcing a couple weeks ago the requirement that companies of over 100 people, which obviously American is, will need to have either everyone vaccinated or do rigorous testing. So our team's going to be subject to that at some point in time. So what we're telling all of our team is, please go get vaccinated now before the end of this month, so that you can actually earn that incentive, because we're all going to get vaccinated before too long, one way or the other.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, if you think you'll have to change your stance to actually require it, given what the White House is requesting of large companies.
Yeah, again, it's our stance has been that we believe, like the administration, that everyone should be vaccinated. And the way we've chosen to implement that is by motivating and trying to incent people to do so, which has been very, very successful, by the way. But again, if indeed the mandate now is everyone must be vaccinated, or rigorously tested once a week, we will obviously comply by that mandate. All along, as we've been going through this, we've been considering mandates and may have done one on our own. But what we wanted to do was do everything we could first to encourage everyone to do so. But we support the administration's position on this, and we obviously will comply.
And can I ask, have you had any workers or a substantial number of workers quit because they don't want to be vaccinated? I think some of the other airlines said that they were kind of surprised that they didn't see a lot of pushback. I'm curious what it's been like in American.
Well, again, up to this point, no one is, we haven't put people in that position of having to choose whether or not they are vaccinated or employed. That's coming, though, as I said. We've through our programs, been able to get the vast majority of our team to get vaccinated anyway. So we'll see. I don't know where we'll end up on that. I'm hopeful that by the time we get to where it's required that everyone, that it's a very small percentage of our team that still isn't vaccinated, and that we're not going to be forced to make that decision ask people to have to make, too many people to have to make that decision.
Yeah. What about, would you support a federal mandate that all airline passengers have to be vaccinated?
Well, first and foremost, what I point out is how safe air travel is, which I think we've done a nice job through this pandemic of proving. It's one of the few places left in the United States where you're required to wear a mask due to a federal mandate. Everyone on the aircraft is masked. The airplane itself, as we've proven, is an incredibly safe place to be, particularly if everyone is masked, because of the way the air flows through the aircraft, because of how often it's refreshed, that it's an incredibly safe place to be. Because of all that, we don't see the need to require people to be vaccinated to travel within the United States. Again, simply because it's a much safer place to be where than people are allowed to move about the United States otherwise. So it's not something that we've opposed. If indeed this was something the administration chose to put in place, I think we'd try and encourage them to think about why that makes sense. But again, we will do whatever people thinks makes the most sense to get this pandemic behind us. But I don't think that will be particularly helpful. I think much more so having large employers require their teams to be vaccinated will have a much bigger impact than trying to go business by business and say these are certain things you can and can't do unless you're vaccinated, particularly those that are the most safe.
Okay. So my next question, you can probably anticipate. As soon as I said I was going to have this conversation with you, I got flooded with stories of people who have flown recently, who've had canceled flights, who've had delayed flights, and in particular, who've been stuck on airplanes or even had to get off because of crew problems. Somebody timed out while they were waiting on the tarmac, the pilot can't fly now, or we need a whole new flight attendant crew. What is going on? Why are we seeing so many of these situations with delays and with crew timing out?
Yeah, thanks. Hopefully most of those notes were from a few months ago and not recently, because as of the last month and a half, certainly we at American have been flying as good an airline and as good on-time performance completion factor as we've ever had. But absolutely, as we were ramping up and as other airlines were ramping up, what we found was, in some cases, and the case of Americans, where I can talk to the easiest, in the tail end of June, we grew our airline in June some 50% higher than it was 3 months earlier. Thanks to some really nice government policy called the payroll support program, all of our team was still on board and being paid, but they weren't all fully. They weren't active. They hadn't all been. They weren't still eligible to fly. They need, airline pilots in particular need to go through rigorous training to get current again. And we just, as we did that, we found in the tail end of June, we ended up with not enough pilots as we hit some bad weather, not enough reserve pilots available to fly our schedule. So what we did is we took aggressive action. We canceled flights out in advance to make sure that we could indeed handle what we had scheduled that was fixed rather quickly. And like I say, through July and particularly August and September, we're flying a really, really good airline right now. Really proud of our team and what we've done. But there's no doubt, I mean, these times are challenging for all of us throughout the country. We've never seen situations like this. We've never grown our airline 50% in 3 months. And things like that will occur. But we're getting them fixed. We've seen, not so much at American, a need with our employees to shortages or anything close to it. But we certainly see it in other parts of the economy, things like drivers, fuel trucks, drivers of catering trucks, wheelchair pushers, et cetera, other items, other areas where we've needed to make sure that we're really aggressive about helping our contractors ensure they have enough people. And we continue to do that. But I do feel good about where we are now. Doesn't mean other areas won't pop up as demand comes back and we grow more. But right now, as I say, we're flying a really, really good airline and really proud of what the team's doing.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said about some of the contractors. I was going to ask you what the hardest position is to hire for you right now. But it sounds like maybe you're spending more time thinking about filling some of those contractor positions to get everything back up to speed. How would you answer what the toughest hire is in your industry right now?
At American, we're 95% unionized, or very high paying jobs. We certainly don't have trouble recruiting people to work at American Airlines. But we do find, and we are learning how fully integrated our business is in terms of our dependency on other companies that do, in some cases, have much bigger challenges. So where we've seen it the hardest, again, is, I'd say the most is in terms of the biggest impact on the operation was drivers for catering trucks and drivers for fuel trucks, which obviously we need both to fly the airline, particularly fuel trucks. So those have been the most challenging. We've worked with our vendors in that case to make sure that they are paying what needs to be paid in order to attract and retain people. And we've obviously agreed to pay that cost so that they can pay people what it takes to make sure that we have what we need.
Interesting. What about supply chain challenges? Are you all, obviously you've added a lot of new aircraft in recent years, but lately, are you having trouble getting parts or some of these other supply chain issues hitting you all?
Well, we haven't yet because we're growing back. So we already have enough aircraft. We have enough parts in place to maintain those airplanes. So we're not in a huge need of new parts and airplanes to be produced. We are certainly seeing at some of our at Boeing, for example, with the 787 delays, that's having an impact. But I don't think that's much more of a certification issue than it is a supply chain issue. One interesting issue we've seen in our business as it relates to supply chain is again fuel. One of the other strange things that we never really, at least I never realized, having been in this business a long time, is that the pipelines. In much of the country, the way the pipelines are allocated is based on the prior 12 months usage. And 12 months ago, there wasn't a lot of usage going to, jet fuel going to airports in certain parts of the country. And when that's your allocation method, and that's what you stick to, all of a sudden you find we found ourselves needing to truck fuel into airports such as Reno and other parts of the country, which is, again, one of these very strange things about the economy we're in now that you learn about how all this is done that made sense in a steady state environment, but don't make sense at all in the world we're in today. So we keep working through things like that. Like I say, there are challenges that we're all working through that we've never seemed to have to work through in decades running this business, but we're fighting through them all.
Yeah. I want to ask you, were very vocal in speaking out during 2020 and the need for government support for the airline industry and airline industry jobs. Obviously, the industry did end up getting over $60 billion, and it's about 75,000 jobs were saved. Obviously, some people do the quick math in their head and sort of say, gee, that's $300,000 or more dollars per job. Was that a good use of government funding? Sort of that seems like a very high number. How do you respond to people who think that, gee, why did it need to be so much money for the airlines?
Yeah, well, I think that's bad math. We saved a lot more than 75,000 jobs. I think we saved the industry. We were in a position where the government was looking to help. One of the ways they wanted to help was just giving us loans. And again, we would have accepted that. But with the demand where it was back in 2020, as public companies given loans, the right thing for us to do with demand that low would have been to shut our airlines down and furlough everyone and just add back capacity when demand came back. That, by the way, is the policy that much of the rest of the world is doing. When I told you I was in Europe recently, and the British Airways team told me that 80% of their flight attendants are still on furlough. We haven't furloughed any flight attendants at American Airlines, and neither of our competitors, because the policy we put in place in this country through something called the Payroll Support Program was to pay the airlines to pay their teams. We accepted, those of us that accepted these funds, which we all did, agreed not to furlough anyone and to continue service to every market that had air service before. And we did that despite there not being nearly enough demand to keep everyone employed and to serve all those markets. But we were being paid to do so by our government, a much better policy than having all those people be on unemployment and us not deciding when to bring them back until we knew demand was there. So we saved a lot more than 75,000 jobs. I think we saved several hundred thousand jobs because I don't know where we'd be as an industry now, and not to mention the consumer benefit of the importance of what we do as commercial airlines to keep the country moving, to allow the country to continue moving through a pandemic, some of it incredibly important, moving things like vaccines, moving people that are healthcare providers, all that. You know, our government had the foresight to look at and say, okay, what we'd rather do rather than giving you some money to stay afloat as a corporation, and then have you furlough everyone. Instead, what we're going to do is give you some support, but you agree not to furlough anybody. And that's what we did. Yeah. It's worked. That policy, by the way, is expired. That PSP program expires right at the end of this month. And for the first time, it's expiring, and there's not one single WARN Act notice out there from a single airline saying you're going to be furloughed on October 1st. The program is going to expire. Demand has now come back, and we're all not only have we not furloughed people, we at American are hiring in every workforce. So I think it was a fantastic policy. I'm proud we supported it. I'm proud of our government for putting it in place, and I'm really happy for our team because we all did that.
Yeah. I want to ask you, you know, another thing that often comes up from readers is obviously they look at, say, your CEO pay and they see a big number like $10 million last year. Now, we should point out that is mostly through stock compensation. But that seems, you know, pretty high to a lot of people. And I'm just wondering, are you supportive, you personally, of the current administration's calls for higher taxes on millionaires? Do you think a little bit higher is maybe the more just and equitable thing to do?
Yeah, well, first on my own, again, I get paid entirely in stock, and when the stock goes down, obviously I make a lot less, which I think it should be. And furthermore, as part of that PSP program that I described, you'll see next year, you know, that mine and other airline executives' compensation is much, much lower because that included severe restrictions on executive compensation and reductions. So I think my pay next year will be down some 40% versus where it was. Again, not complaining about that, just noting that we agreed to large cuts in executive compensation in exchange for those funds that I talked about as well. As it relates to taxes on high net worth individuals, you know, I think this is an American Airlines position, it's a personal opinion. I'm certainly happy to pay more. I think that's a right, that's an obligation for those of us as Americans to make sure that we're paying our fair share. And again, high net worth individuals will argue they're paying more than their fair share. But those of us that can't afford to pay more, I think have an obligation to be willing to do so if it helps the country move forward. So again, that's my own personal view, not an American Airlines view. It's not really an American Airlines question. But I think I think it's probably more pervasive than people think that those of us that are fortunate enough to make more should pay more.
Thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry we've run out of, I've got a lot more for you, like on unruly passengers, but maybe we'll chat about that next time. Thank you for joining us at Washington Post Live.
Thanks, Heather. I appreciate it.
And thanks to our audience for tuning in to another great discussion about where we are in this recovery and what's next. As always, you can find out our great upcoming speakers at WashingtonPostLive.com and on Twitter and YouTube. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. To hear more interviews from this series and other Washington Post Live programs, visit us at WashingtonPostLive.com.
No matter what you're a fan of, Texas has the trip for you. There's the trip to Texas and the trip. Or maybe you're the kind of fan who'd prefer a trip to Texas or a trip. Either way, go to TravelTexas.com/getyourown for the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours.